Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of February 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Harry Cooney will be here from GrowMark to talk about the agricultural energy segment, especially about crude oil, its price, gasoline usage, how it's related to ethanol, and the strike that's been taking place at refineries across the nation. We'll also take a look at the weather forecast, and we'll hear from Tom Vilsack, the Secretary of Agriculture, about President Obama's fiscal 2016 budget. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. Futures in the March futures from the corn pit, that is, up 16 cents for the day at $3.85¾. The May contract at $3.93¾, up 16. And July futures there at $4.01, up 15½. September, $4.07¾, up 15¼. December contract up 15¼ at $4.16¼. Soy complex bean futures now March contract at 27½ cent gain to settle at $9.87. The May futures up 26¾ at $9.93. July 9.98 up 26¼. And August beans 25½ higher. November of next year up 21 cents at $9.66¼. Bean meal futures at $3.40.60 up $12.70. And the bean oil for the day a gain of 39 cents at $30.80. Chicago soft red winter wheat at $5.13¾ up 21. In the March, July at $5.22¼, up 20½. The hard red Kansas City at $5.59, up 24½. And July at $5.63¾, up 23¾ for the day. Live futures, live cattle, that is, from the CME Group at $153.65. Finished 45 cents higher. April at $150.40, up 80 cents on the afternoon. Feeder cattle in the March contract at $199.65. A dollar and a nickel lower. April at $199.85, down $1.05 as well. And lean hogs on the day finished the February up 75 at $67.07½. The April at $70.75, down 17½ cents.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Checking the outside markets, crude oil for the day at $52.69 a barrel. Again, a rally today of $3.12 a barrel. Heating oil is at $1.84¼. That's 8¢ of a cent higher. And gasoline on the Arbobber wholesale price at $1.59¼, 4¢ of a cent higher. Natural gas for the day at $2.74¼, up 6¢. And ethanol futures trading the nearby contract on its settlement price at $1.45, up 6 cents for the afternoon. Dow Jones Industrial Average around 17,557, 258 points higher. The gold futures finished up around $1,263 even, $13.50 lower, and the U.S. dollar index down 0.979 at 93.755. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Partly sunny skies, a high of 31 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy and 26. Tomorrow, a 60% chance of snow, a high of 27. A 30% chance as it fades into Wednesday night for snow and a low of just 3 degrees as it clears out and brings us sunny skies for Thursday with a high of 15. Thursday night, mostly clear and again, 3 degrees for the low. And on Friday, mostly sunny and a high of 32. By Friday night, we'll have partly cloudy skies, a low of 29. And on Saturday, partly sunny with a high of 39 degrees. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll hear from Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. This is Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, you're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson joins us for this third day of February to take a look at a pretty good-sized rally in the marketplace. This started in the overnight hours and continued all day long. What led the markets and commodities higher?
Well, Todd, I would have to say that the dollar being a little bit lower on the day, that's down over a penny or whatever, or 1,000 points here. The crude oil being higher by $3. And then as we saw some buying come in, you know, we'd noticed the open interest had continued to gain or grow on the downward movement in these corn and the beans. And all of a sudden we saw some short covering that hit stops. And, they said the funds bought somewhere in excess of 21,000 contracts of corn and 8,000 contracts of wheat and somewhere between 15,000 and 16,000 contracts of beans. And that was a self-fulfilling prophecy there that just kept hitting stops and growing through the day as it went on.
Is this black box trading, algorithm trading, in other words, or is this real people pushing the buttons and finding stops?
Well, I think that basically it started with the algos and black box people, and then all along it got turned around that it then added into the other people, that had shorted this market or had stops placed to 10 cents above the market or 20 cents above the market to make sure that they didn't have a loss, and just multiplied as the day went on.
And what are your expectations for the overnight trade then?
Well, you know, it was a strong close. We will have to say that the March corn did close back above its 100-day moving average. That would have been up around 78, 79 here now, and we closed at 85. So, you know, is there going to be some follow-through buying for the evening or not? That's the big question we all have, because this looked sort of like, you know, a little bit of a blow-off type area where they come up and covered, and maybe we're going to settle back into looking at the fundamentals. But I think the big thing is going to be is what's crude oil going to continue to do? It seems to be the leader for this rally.
Okay, so if that is the fundamental that is really leading this market, it's an outside marketplace, and we'll talk about it with Harry Cooney later in this half hour. But what do you see? It was a pretty good jump, $3.25 in the lead option March contract for the crude oil.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the unions and what they're doing and the striking has raised a little bit of concern by a lot of others on, you know, how much gas is going to be available, how much crude is going to be able to run through with the increased usage of gasoline along the way by the cheaper price. So, but that is, you know, hanging up a little bit over our heads. We did see on the other outside markets, the stock markets seem to react okay. Greece is playing nice with Germany on the EU negotiations on their debt restructuring, and a lot of things like that are sort of falling into place. Also, you know, we did get a little spurt out of the wheat, probably out of the idea that Russia is going to be a little more intense on restricting some of their wheat exports, at least the millable quality here over the next month. They come in and said that. We did see Brazilian bean estimate lowered a little bit from the 95.5 that the USDA is using down to possibly closer to 93 because of some of the dry weather. But we also saw that they're probably going to raise the Argentine by about the same amount. So South America is still going to be in here for a lot of beans. But a lot of cash moved today on offers that were put in at elevators and around on this big movement. So we'll probably see basis a little wider come morning.
All right. Thanks so much for taking the time with us. We do appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana.
Guarantee your seats today for the March 10th All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. It's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is $25 and includes a continental breakfast and Beef House lunch. Keynoting the day is Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services, and we'll get a presentation on land values from Murray Wise. And we'll take all of your questions on soybean and corn futures, cash grain, and whatever else is on your mind. Call now for tickets at 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300.
End
today's agricultural news, the U.S. Department of Agriculture released its fiscal year 2016 proposed budget yesterday with a total spending level that's 3% higher than this year, yet below the proposed level in 2010. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says the budget is more than just numbers.
It's an expression of values, and I think it ought to be a roadmap to a brighter and better future.
More money for research and beginning farmers is in the proposal, along with a nearly $1.5 billion cut for crop insurance subsidies. Vilsack is also looking to adjust rates, subsidies, and payments for preventative planting and harvest price loss coverage.
What we're doing here is responding to an OIG audit that essentially said that our preventative planting payments could be adjusted a bit, and also taking a look at the harvest price loss coverage, which has received some criticism in terms of the level of subsidy and the opportunity that it creates for a fairly significant payout.
Combine higher payouts for ARC with slightly less payouts for crop insurance, and Vilsack says the result is about the same as what was proposed in the Farm Bill. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., but with the broader fiscal year budget as presented by the president, it makes requests to Congress and calls for the creation of a new single food safety agency, new discretionary funds, but some cuts, as you've already heard, in crop insurance. The budget requests, likely to be changed by Congress, would reduce subsidies for revenue insurance policies that ensure the price at harvest time. A second would reform prevented planted coverage, including adjustments to payment rates. Together, we'll look at these a bit more in depth. The proposals are expected to save $1.6 billion a year, but the president's USDA FDA request would still seek $25 billion in annual discretionary funding versus $22 billion they sought last year. The new money would go for beginning farmers and ranchers, food aid for the young and old, ag research, especially for antimicrobial resistance and climate resilience, pollinator health, and food safety. Again, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack defended the president's proposed consolidation of food safety in a single agency versus 15 now, likely at the Department of Health and Human Services, not USDA.
I think you all are asking questions in the old way of thinking. This is a new way of thinking. You're all focused on turf. You're all focused on whose jurisdiction it is. At the end of the day, we're focused on food safety. We're focused on making sure people have safer food.
The idea is not new. Congress, led by Illinois Senator Richard Durbin and others, has tried unsuccessfully for years to create a single food safety agency. Vilsack, meantime, expects the Farm Bill's new safety net programs, ARC and PLC, to pay out significant new sums as commodity prices remain depressed.
I'm taking a look at the next 12 to 18 months, and what we see is clearly the possibility that payouts could be $1 billion to $1.5 billion higher than anticipated. But that's the point. The point of having a safety net is when prices come down to a point where they're at or below the sort of break-even point, you don't want the folks having to lose the farm.
The new budget request also seeks over $1 billion in financial help for rural businesses, including a new rural business development grant program, and the budget attempts to address some complaints by congressional Republicans over food stamps. It would dedicate $4 million to improve states' handling of SNAP and more than $14 million to streamline reporting and reduce improper payments in child nutrition programs. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Please join us if you can tomorrow at the Pork Expo at the Peoria Civic Center in the afternoon. Starting at 1:30, I'll be there along with a panel of analysts to take a look at pork production and the grain markets. Jackie Vakes, who you hear on Wednesdays regularly here, will be on the floor with us. That's tomorrow at the Pork Expo in Peoria. We hope to see you then, and if not then, Thursday evening we'll be at the Northfield Inn and Suites. That's in Springfield, Illinois. Take the Sangamon Avenue exit off of Interstate 55. It's really close to that exit, so the Northfield Inn and Suites. Find us at 6:30. This one's sponsored by Strategic Farm Marketing. Bill Mayer will be there. They'll talk about crop insurance, the Farm Bill. We'll have Bill Mayer along with Kurt Kimmel and Matt Bennett to take up the commodity markets. Should be a great program. That's Thursday night, 6:30, free and open to all. Can't make that one. Saturday morning at 11:15, we'll be in Joliet at the Farmland Forum that's sponsored by Chicago Farmers at Joliet Junior College, the Weitendorf building that's across from the Chicago Speedway there in Joliet. 11:15 a.m., Gary Schnitke with us, Chuck Shelby, and Matt Bennett on that one. Lots of opportunity to check up on the marketplace and the farm bill in the next 3 days. Speaking of the farm bill, you know it's time for landowners and farm operators to make some of those decisions related to the programs. I'll have more in just a moment. It is the landowner that must make, unless power of attorney has been put in place, the first in a series of three decisions related to commodity crop programs under the new Farm Bill. This is a decision related to commodities like corn, soybean, and wheat. University of Illinois ag economist Gary Schnitke says it's up to the landowner to decide how base acres will be allocated. Landowners will get letters in the mail related to each of the decisions. The first letter related to the program crops, yields, and subject of this story, base acres, should have been received way back last August.
So they got that letter, and that had one base acre allocation in it, and they can keep that, or they can update it to the other one, which is based on their average plantings from 2009 to 12.
The August letter from the Farm Service Agency detailed the current allocation of base acres by FSA farm number. It simply wanted the landowner to confirm those figures were correct. Today, the landowner needs to consider whether that mix of acres is or is not the mix to be used going forward.
And so they can keep that current base acres or they can update it. And they can update it to the proportion of plantings from 2009 through 12. And those plantings were given also in that 2014 letter. So both sets of information are given in that letter.
Well, here's how Gary Schnitke thinks about that decision.
From my standpoint, the decision is fairly simple. You look at the two allocations. They're going to have the same total base acres in it. The allocation won't change the total base acres, but it will change which crops have the most acres. And I would tend to choose the allocation with the most corn acres in it. So if it's a choice between an allocation with 75% acres in corn, 25% acres in soybean versus a 50-50, I would choose the one with the most corn acres.
Again, Schnitke believes it best to choose the allocation with the most corn base. This is simple enough if the farm is in a two-commodity rotation, corn and soybean. However, adding wheat base to the mix, if it's still in the current crop rotation, can complicate the matter a little.
So if you have wheat in your base, and this would be probably more of a southern Illinois situation, what we would expect, and these acre allocation decisions impact what PLC, what acres they will pay on in the future, Arkin County and PLC. The way it looks is corn will pay the most, wheat the second, followed by soybeans.
Here then is the standard base acre allocation rule of thumb. Choose the base with the most corn acres and the least soybean acres. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. Let's check the agricultural energy markets. Harry Cooney is here from GrowMark out of Bloomington, Illinois. Thanks, Harry. What a day it's been. What a several sets of days it's been in the crude oil. Tell me about energies and what's been happening.
Well, yes. Good afternoon, Todd. It has been a tremendous week in the energy complex. We traded a couple of weeks ago down to around $44 a barrel in crude oil. Today, we traded all the way up to just over $54 a barrel. So we're already $10 off the low that we just scored not too long ago. In fact, crude oil was actually up $3 and almost 50 cents a barrel today alone. Several factors getting into this market. There's been a steel workers' strike at some of the refineries, causing some concern. Also, in the past couple of weeks, the rig counts, the operating rig counts, that gives us a feel for whether the industry is starting to contract in numbers or not, has shown a large decline in the number of operating rigs, giving thoughts that down the road, oil supplies may peak out. They're real large right now, but they may peak out and then start to decline. And, of course, we're working with a futures market. So it got real excited here, sharply higher. The dollar's been lower. Of course, the grains have been up. So it's kind of like a grass fire today. Everything caught fire, and this has been going on in the energies for several days.
So at what point do you suppose we get in price that it brings online some of those things that have begun to shut down?
Oh, I think it would take some time. I mean, they've just started to, in the past several months here, shut some rigs down. Now, we got to keep in mind that some of these rigs that they've shut down are some of the lower producing rigs, though, also. So it's not like the massive impact right up front. But if they continue to curtail rig operations, then it could start having an impact on oil supplies. And now this massive $10 rally off the lows, it's time will tell how much of an impact that's had. Now, keep in mind, we came down from $107 a barrel to $44, though, so $10 up here sounds like a lot, but compared to the decline that we had of probably 60% in the market from last July or June's highs, this is still a fairly small compared to that entire down move.
This $10 jump, I bet, has piqued a lot of people's interest. I suspect there will be many thinking they should hedge some of their needs for the year.
That's exactly right. In fact, we put out a fill recommendation to fill inventories to our FS member cooperatives early last week, and to fill their end users also. The problem was that there wasn't much time after we put it out to actually get those prices. And in the past week or two, contracting by end users has just been very, very active. In fact, today we've had one of our largest days of contracting that we've had probably in several years potentially.
Now, are you contracting for individual end users or for the FS cooperatives, or both?
For the FS cooperatives that entail are doing it for their end users, yes.
So there is real demand by farmers,
yes,
and other end users, because the FS cooperatives, I take it, are reacting to what their clients are telling them they want to do.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. The end user sees these values out there, values they haven't seen for 4 or 5 years or more. So even though the market's way off the lows here, there's still some darn good values for end users to be able to lock in some values and to get some numbers in the ag community that are significantly below in fuel what they've been in the past few years, whereas in some other areas of the ag economy, some of their input costs may be down, but not nearly as much in percentage terms.
Now, Harry, I have one request of you. If you can get them to give me a credit card with gallons on it instead of dollars, I would be very happy to contract some of my needs for the coming year for
gasoline.
I'll
have them work on that, Todd. I'll have them work on that one.
I think I was thinking about that. I thought, man, I've got a whole bunch of drivers in my house, and I could sure use a way to contract some of this.
Well, and gasoline at the pump has come up. I mean, you know,
well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, we've had the sub $2 level, and now we're back over $2. So we're starting to see it at the pump here a little bit also.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Harry. We do appreciate
you
being
Todd.
With us. That, of course, Harry Cooney. He's from GrowMark and talks to us on a Tuesday afternoon once a month to take a look at the agricultural energies. We'll be back in, just about 2 minutes with the weather forecast.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
It's National Carrot Cake Day. Carrots have been used in sweet cakes since at least the medieval period, at which time sweeteners were relatively scarce. On this day in agricultural history in 1815, the world's first commercial cheese factory was established in Switzerland. By the way, today there are some 450 types of cheese available in Switzerland. In 1823, Spencer Fullerton Braid was born, an American naturalist and zoologist. He was the second secretary of the Smithsonian Institute. By the end of his tenure, the National Museum housed more than 2.5 million specimens and artifacts. In 1862, William Jackson Humphreys was born, an American atmospheric physicist. He applied basic physical laws to explain the optical, electrical, acoustical, and thermal properties of the atmosphere. In 1890, Christophorus Ballet died, a Dutch meteorologist. He is best known for his observation that wind blows at right angles to the atmospheric pressure gradient. And in 1913, the 16th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified. It gave Congress the power to levy taxes on income. In 1913, less than 1% of the population paid income tax at the rate of 1%. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this third day of February. Let's check in on the weather forecast. Drew Lerner has an update on the Midwest and the planet.
Midwest weather will likely be a lot more tranquil over this next 5 to 7 days relative to that of the weekend. We are expecting to see another little disturbance or two, in fact, move across the region as we move out over time. The disturbances that are expected, though, will be weak weather systems that will not have a huge impact on travel across the region or adding to the deep snowpack that has already accumulated. With that said, though, there will be a little bit of additional accumulation in parts of the region. We'll expect our first disturbance to come out of the Dakotas, move across southern Minnesota and northern Iowa during the course of the day today, and by this evening working its way through Michigan, parts of northern Ohio, northern Indiana. This will likely produce a dusting upwards to an inch or two of snowfall, but not likely to be much more than that. Its follow-up system, though, will be a little bit more significant. This system will likely form overnight tonight in Nebraska, and it will move east-southeastward through the day tomorrow, bringing another round of snow to portions of southern Iowa, northern Missouri, northeastern Kansas, and ultimately into the lower Midwest as we go through the latter part of the day tomorrow and into Thursday morning. The snow event there will likely run anywhere from a dusting upwards to 2 to 3 inches in a few locations. Moisture content in these two disturbances will be low, but there will still be enough precipitation across the region to slow down some of the travel across the region. But both these systems will not be nearly as significant as what occurred over the weekend, obviously. Our temperature bias for this work week will likely continue to be mostly in a seasonably cool range. We'll expect to see a lot of afternoon temperatures today confined to the teens and 20s across the northern parts of the Midwest, while we'll see some 20s and 30s occurring in the south. May get up over 40 degrees today, though, from southeastern parts of Nebraska and eastern Kansas into portions of southern Illinois and a part of Kentucky. We'll look for the temperatures to cool down a little bit more tomorrow, though, as that little snow event works its way across the Midwest. Highs will be in the teens and 20s in most of the western Corn Belt, a few 30s in parts of Missouri, and we'll also see 20s and 30s occurring in the eastern parts of the Midwest with some 40-degree temperatures near the Ohio River. As we get into Thursday afternoon, those teens and 20s will overspread a big part of the Midwest. We'll have a few 30-degree temperatures near the Ohio River again and also in parts of Missouri. And then a bigger warm-up will likely begin to occur Friday and Saturday, with temperatures a lot more seasonable across the region, in fact, even a little warmer than normal in some of the southwestern crop areas. We'll look for some temperatures in the 50s, perhaps even some 60-degree temperatures in Kansas and a few Nebraska locations. Most of the 40s and 50s, though, will occur from southern Iowa and parts of Missouri into the Ohio River Basin. The areas further north will still be quite a bit cooler, with 20s and 30s likely. Our low temperatures coming up over the next couple of nights will slowly rebound, but will still be quite chilly. Positive negative single-digit readings will occur in the far northwestern Corn Belt overnight tonight. A lot of other areas in the heart of the Midwest will see temperatures mostly in the teens and 20s, a few single digits from northern Iowa and southern Minnesota into parts of Michigan. We'll look for the coldest air for this week to occur on Thursday. We'll look for the lows in the positive negative single digits in most of the western Corn Belt. Temperatures in the positive single digits in teens will occur further to the east. South America's forecast today has not changed at all. We're still looking at well-timed precipitation for both Brazil and Argentina. It may take 2 weeks, though, for all areas to get rain at one time or another. There will be some pockets of dryness to keep an eye on, but nothing extreme.
That's meteorologist Drew Lerner, and wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.